It's MRC TV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
Welcome to the MRC TV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner.
I'm Brittany Hughes. Happy Wednesday again. It's a pretty one today.
It's a pretty one today, but it's not so pretty in the news.
It's not.
I would like to start a new segment.
When was the last time it was pretty in the news, to be fair?
It's been a while. Get the beep ready, because I like to start a segment called What the is Wrong with People?
I'm good with that. The only problem I have with a segment like that is I feel like we're going to need to extend this podcast for longer than 25 or so minutes.
Seriously, what is going on? First of all, let's talk about this. Last week in New York, you did a story. We mentioned it last week that they're now all like celebrating. Lawmakers are rejoicing because you can kill a baby up until the point that it comes out of the womb.
Huzzah. Infanticide. Everybody loves some infanticide. I had a whole weekend to process this, and I'm still not quite, it hasn't quite sunk in. Actually, you know what's really funny is that people that I know that say that they're pro-choice, like friends that I have, or old high school buddies on Facebook and stuff, even some family members. I almost got into it with a family member, because most even pro-choice people that I know that say, like, I'm okay with abortion up to a certain point. You know, first trimester, or, you know, super early on, that kind of thing, which, again, is a whole other discussion. Like, that's no better. But, you know, at least you're talking about really early on. They are outraged. What I think is actually kind of interesting is that New York's push for such an extreme abortion law that literally allows abortion up through the 9th month of pregnancy has even pushed some pro-choice people to the more pro-life side, saying, I'm sorry, but I can't get down with all of that. And I actually think it's really interesting, because it sort of reveals what pro-lifers have known about Americans for a long time, which is that we are increasingly moving more and more pro-life with accepting more and more restrictions on abortion.
Yeah, no, I know a Democrat, someone that is now a former Democrat, and they actually say the Democratic Party, I didn't leave the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party left me. And they use this as an example. They said Bill Clinton, you know, back in the time when I was a Democrat, was, you know, abortion was safe, legal, and rare. And now it's shout your abortion, and you can abort up until the moment of birth. And that's just something a lot of people can get behind. But following on the footsteps of New York, Virginia delegates, in particular, Virginia delegate Kathy Tran decided she was going to go up and inform committee members about her repeal act, which, of course, basically allows abortion up to 40 weeks. And again, this is for physical or mental issues.
Which is bullcrap.
I would say people are under a lot of physical and mental stress when they're giving birth. But in this case, she was asked, what about when the mother is dilating? Listen to this response.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
make at that
point. I
understand that. I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
Wow.
It's you know what it is? It's not ridiculous. I'm going to take that back. It's evil. We've gone from, you know, there are some things that, you know, universal health care, for example. There are some issues that I look at and I say, that's in the realm of good idea, bad idea, right? That's in the realm of, you know, this works,
yeah,
and this
everyone,
doesn't.
Everyone to have health care in and of itself
it's
is
just whether
not
or not
a horrible
it actually
idea.
Works.
Right. Whether or not you can financially do it, how much you'd have to tax people, whether or not it's the government's role, that's all debatable.
That's,
but the idea
that's
that everyone,
math.
Wouldn't it be nice if everyone had health insurance? Of course. Sure.
And that's, those kinds right. of issues, those are based on math. Those are based on, you know, your math adds up, my math doesn't. You know, again, good idea, bad idea. But then there are other issues like this one that to me are very black and white, good versus evil. This is no longer about your opinion. This is no longer about whether or not something really adds up or something makes sense. No, this is about, it's flat out evil to advocate for abortion of a fully developed infant up until the moment that it is born. You're talking about a baby with a developed nervous system. You're talking about a baby that has been unique from day one. But, I mean, this is no longer something that kind of looks like a sea monkey. you know, we're talking about a full-on baby at this point. And again, I think that it's this radical nature that is starting to make even people on the left start to realize, okay, this is no longer, like you said, this is no longer safe, legal, and rare. This is no longer something that we look at as a tragic circumstance that a woman might find herself in, whether she is young and alone and terrified, or she, you know, just got a bad diagnosis or something like that. No, this is abortion on demand for any reason up through the third trimester. And it's evil.
40 weeks. It removes ultrasound requirements. It removes the 24-hour waiting
safety
period.
Safety requirements on clinics gone. You don't, I mean, and we've seen that. We've seen how women have suffered in situations like that when these kinds of regulations are repealed. One thing that I really do want to kind of address, though, is I've seen a lot of people, because you know how you have those people that have, they've towed this line for so long that they have to stick to it. You know, those people that they've been pro-choice.
You know, pink buildings and scream and celebrate when these things happen.
Well, exactly. People that stomp around in the streets with, you know, Stand By Planned Parenthood t-shirts, and they wear their stupid pink knitted hats and all that. But you have these people that are so in the trenches for this issue that they have to defend it no matter what. And one thing that I keep seeing over and over again, especially from some people on social media that are a little more extreme, is, well, this is only for the situation of a fetal anomaly or, you know, the physical health of the mother. That's not true. That's simply not true. That's not a matter of opinion. That's not a matter of, no, I don't think so. That is simply untrue. First of all, this does not restrict late-term abortions to cases where the baby has been diagnosed with a medical condition that it is not going to survive. First of all, that only comprises about 0.5% of all abortions anyway, so we're talking about an extreme subset there. But this also has nothing to do with the physical health of the mother, and that's very easy to recognize because in the third trimester, you've passed the point of viability. Okay, you can take a baby early via C-section. So even if there were a condition where the mother's life is in danger, let's say that she's diagnosed with cancer and they want to start chemo right away or something like that, right? The death of the child is no longer necessary. You just do an early C-section. So you cannot make the argument that abortion is necessary to save the physical life of the mother. Even if you could, that's not even what this law says. The law restricts it to health of the mother. Well, health can mean anything you want it to mean.
You know, and they talk about mental health and physical health. And I would say a woman that is dilating, maybe getting ready to give birth, is probably not in the best mental or physical state of their life at that particular time.
Well, look, I'm 20 weeks pregnant this week, and I haven't been in a good mental health state, I can tell you.
As someone that works with you, I just have no idea what you're talking about.
Really? Let's say, I mean, my mental health has never been 100% there. Let's go ahead and, I mean, you know. But all that to say, I mean, look, carrying a baby is hard. You know, it's difficult to grow a human. It's more difficult than I realized before I, you know, started down this journey. You know, it wasn't fun barely being able to get out of bed except to run to the bathroom for 6 weeks. You know, it's not fun that things, you know, stretch and move in ways that they've never had to stretch and move before. It's not an easy thing. You know, but at the same time, this is how human beings reproduce. This is how human beings come into the world. And that is exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about human beings. So when you start to pass laws that say, okay, well, you know, for any reason, when it may compromise, you know, your health, your mental health, your psychological health, your emotional health, well, that can literally mean, you know, if you're 8 months pregnant and the guy you're with decides, you know what, I thought I could do this, but I can't do this anymore, and leaves you. And you have a panic attack,
right?
And you can't do this anymore. You know, I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And we are talking about developed babies. So again, I think this shows the radical extremism of the left on this issue.
Oh, and the celebrations about it, the screaming from lawmakers, the lighting up of the Trade Center pink. It's just, and the fact that, you know, other lawmakers, now we're seeing it here in Virginia, you know, wanting to follow suit. Like, this is a great idea. We need to follow it. It is bizarre to me. And I'll let you speak. You're the woman that's 20 weeks pregnant. So
you're the man that has two children. So
yeah, but I didn't actually birth them, believe it or not.
I do think it's a shame that we've relegated men to the side skirts of this issue, though, simply because they are men. Because look, these babies that women are aborting, whether it's early on or whether it's late term, they have fathers too. And what I think is a real travesty is that you oftentimes have fathers who end up missing out on fatherhood who don't get a choice in this. And, you know, and those opinions should be heard, in my opinion, because, I mean, you're 50%
You're partially responsible. You are partially responsible.
I can tell you this doesn't happen on your own. I can tell you that for sure.
Now, you mentioned, the funny thing is, you mentioned the mental health. And when Delegate Tran was asked about that, you know, how would the physician decide something about the mental health of somebody? You know, she didn't really have an answer. She didn't have her experts available.
What type of mental health conditions would you anticipate would be utilized by physicians under these circumstances to determine that a child that is otherwise viable is worthy of an abortion?
You know, I mean, again, I'm not a physician, so I can't make those calls as to when a physician would determine that a woman's mental health where they would be able to certify an abortion at that point.
But the doctor, the physician wouldn't have to have any specialized training in mental health to make that determination under your bill, right?
Under this bill, no.
Well, that's because it's subjective. And again, this is what Roe v. Wade ultimately did, right? It didn't, you know, everybody said it essentially legalized abortion across all 50 states. But the actual decision, if you go back and read it, is not quite that way. It was a privacy case. It was that these decisions have to be determined between a woman and her doctor, and that there's a privacy issue involved here, right? So essentially, that's kind of the spin that they put on this is, well, what determines mental health? That's why they write these laws so vague. That's why you can't come out and factually say, oh, well, this only applies to physical health situations or fetal anomalies. No, it doesn't. It's written in such a way that it allows for a broad interpretation of the word health, because the whole point that they're trying to make is, well, this is between a woman, her doctor, and what they decide
that
means.
And this is the party that, you know, people need safe spaces to deal with MAGA hats.
And smirks. Apparently, assault smirks.
You see a MAGA hat. Oh, for my mental health, I need a safe space. Please protect me. I need it. You know. Oh boy, their definition of mental health is pretty broad.
It's pretty ridiculous, and I think a lot of people in Virginia too. I'm a born and raised Virginian, and I think that this is something that a lot of people, including people that would consider themselves somewhat pro-choice to a point, I think are very frustrated by, and I think are very worried by, because these are the kinds of things that look Virginia. It didn't used to be this way. You know, it's kind of like Texas. I know Texas is really worried because you've got a lot of people from California fleeing California because everything sucks so bad there, and they come to Texas. Virginia's kind of going through the same thing.
Yeah, if you go south of Fredericksburg, people have a very different political opinion in Virginia.
It's completely different. I mean, Virginia's practically two states, depending on which side of 95, you know, you're on. If you go far enough north, it's like a completely different thing. You know, and we had a radical far left governor in Terry McAuliffe. We've got a radical far left governor in Northam. And I think people are starting to get really, really worried now where this is going. Because, again, you're not talking about just an abortion law. You're talking about a radical, extreme one. And I also think, too, that this issue is becoming more and more polarized and is going to end up reaching kind of a breaking point. We're going to see this issue come back up through the courts and end up in the Supreme Court, probably in more way than one, because on the one hand, you have states pushing this extreme third trimester abortion, you know, permissiveness. And then on the other hand, you have a lot of bills going through a lot of other states that are restricting abortion to when the heartbeat is found. Well, the heartbeat is, you can find the heartbeat at 6 weeks, which is well before some women even know that they're pregnant. Many doctors won't even see you until you're about 8 weeks because of the rate of miscarriage before that. So you've got a lot of states pushing on the one hand, a lot of states pushing on the other hand. And I think you're going to see this come to a head, and it's going to be interesting.
What's amazing to me, though, is the way when they present these bills, how really unapologetic they are. And I'm going to take that as the segue to talk about somebody who issued an apology that maybe he shouldn't have. You did an interesting story this week, and this would follow the nature of the beginning of the topic of this show, of what the hell is wrong with people here? Tom Brokaw, not exactly the most popular journalist known to members of the MRC, I would say, on the whole.
I wish I could do a good Tom Brokaw impression. I don't have a good Tom Brokaw impression. You know where he sort of talks like... He's kind of like the Sean Connery of news.
I haven't tried. I haven't tried. I wouldn't want to try it out on the air for
the first
time.
You remember, though, when he used to like report the news and he just...
Issues.
Reported the news.
Not with Brokaw. It's
been a hot minute. But look, you know, and this makes my heart sad because you're actually going to make me kind of defend Tom Brokaw here. So here's what happened. On Sunday's Meet the Press, Brokaw actually, he said some things that were complete bullcrap, and then he said some things that weren't. And what's interesting is the part
it's
that he
like
ended up apologized
newscasts.
For. It's exactly, well, and the guy's, 78 now, I believe. So, look, they had him on the show, and he started out, they were talking about immigration, of course, and he actually made the comment that a lot of his Republican friends, actually, we could probably just play the clip.
But the fact is, on the Republican side, a lot of people see the rise of an extraordinary, important new constituency in American politics, Hispanics, who will come here and all be Democrats. Also, I hear when I push people a little harder, I don't know whether I want brown grandbabies. I mean, that's also a part of it. It's the intermarriage that is going on and the cultures that are conflicting with each other. I also happen to believe that the Hispanics should work harder at assimilation. That's one of the things I've been saying for a long time. You know, that they ought not to be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all their kids are learning to speak English and that they feel comfortable in the communities. And that's going to take outreach on both sides, frankly.
So you see, obviously, in the beginning, he's like, yeah, all my Republican friends are just a bunch of racists and they don't want brown grandbabies or
that's
something.
What he hears from his GOP friends,
which is, I mean, I question what kind of GOP friends he has, because I've got a lot of them and none of them are like that. You know, so maybe it's his friends and his choice in friends that are the question here. You know, but of course, he lobs that accusation at Republicans and they're all just a bunch of racists who are afraid of immigrants because it's going to change the color of their grandkids' skin. But then he actually makes the plausible point that, okay, I also think that Hispanic Americans should do a better job of assimilating. If you're going to come here to be an American, learn the language, teach it to your kids, assimilate into the culture that you have chosen to enter into, right? Nobody forced you to come here. Well, it's real interesting which part of his comments he ended up being forced to apologize for. Nobody got upset that he had called a bunch of Republicans racists.
No, what he chose to apologize for was the fact that, you know, and what was his apology? He put it on Twitter, didn't he?
His apology was basically, look, I'm so sorry that I criticized America's great tradition of diversity. And I'm trying to figure out where in his statement he criticized diversity. Nobody's saying that we can't be diverse.
Yeah, no.
But it would be nice to be able to, like, you know, talk to the person that you're buying your groceries from. Like, a common language is a pretty basic thing we're talking about here, right? Nobody's saying that you can't bring your great-grandma's taco recipe from Mexico. We're just saying that, you know, maybe don't hole up in an immigrant community where you kind of just build a community based on the same things that you came from. You don't assimilate into American culture. You don't teach your children how to be Americans. You don't teach them the language. And look, he made a good point that's backed up by data. Okay, we have a record almost 67 million people in this country who speak a foreign language at home. Okay, now that doesn't mean that they don't speak any English, but their base language that they speak at home is another language. The vast majority, about 2/3 of that, is Spanish. And we're starting to see when these kids end up going to school, the education system are the ones that have to teach them English. Well, that puts
right.
a great
English is
burden
a second
on
language
teachers.
Has become very costly for American educators.
A huge, huge thing. So again, I don't think he said anything. This is something that would not have been considered radical before. I mean, you hear stories upon stories of people whose grandparents came over from other countries and literally refused to let them speak anything but English because they wanted so bad to assimilate into America. So I don't see anything offensive.
And like I said, you know, you can go to so many places in America where the culture becomes predominantly Spanish, it becomes predominantly Hispanic because the people move into that area, they open up stores in that area, everybody speaks it within that community. So learning English really doesn't become part of your daily life to function.
Well, and we were taught that when I lived overseas for a couple of years. I lived in Peru, and we were told that. We were actually told by the organization that sent us, look, get out in the community, make some native friends. Don't just insulate yourself with the Americans that you find. Don't just go to an English speaking church or just watch movies in English. Don't do that, because you won't learn the language if you do that. You have to get out and you have to immerse yourself. But there have been many places that I know. I mean, the church that I once went to actually rented their facility on Sunday afternoons to a Hispanic church, a Spanish-speaking church, which I have no problem with if you want to worship in your own language, because sometimes that can get a little complicated, and that's fine. But I met so many people who absolutely wonderful people, but you heard time and time again, this person's been here for 10 years, this person's been here for 15 years, and they barely spoke a word of English at all. So again, I nobody is saying that if you come here in your 50s that you have to suddenly be fluent in a year. Nobody's saying that, okay? We're not trying to put some crazy expectations on people, but come here if you're going to choose to come here, because again, no one's forcing you to come here.
Right.
If you choose to come here, be an American, attempt to learn the language, and adopt American values. Because again, this country, any country, really, only works if there is a sense of cohesiveness among its people. That doesn't mean everybody has to be exactly the same, or that you can't bring pieces of where your family came from. That's great. Okay. We love that. Otherwise, every restaurant would be an Applebee's and it would be awful. But at least make an attempt to adopt the American values that we have, rather than just set up a community that's exactly like what you came from, because there's a reason you left that. That crap wasn't working out for you back wherever you came from, right? That's why you left. Otherwise, you'd still be there. So don't just come here and try to replicate that. Come here and be a part of what makes America great and successful.
You got to come here because you want to become an American.
Absolutely.
One thing I do want to touch upon, very, very important as we approach the weekend, the Super Bowl.
I have nothing to say to you right now.
Ah, yes. I'm gonna reach deep down into my New England roots and say, once again, our ninth time to see the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. But now we're gonna deal with people like Daniel Radcliffe from Harry Potter. He's upset.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
He's upset. And I get it. I understand that. The nice thing about being in this area is you see people from all over. I got neighbors that are Green Bay fans, that are Dallas Cowboy fans, of course, the Redskins fans.
Ravens, hello.
Yeah, well, you're from Virginia. You should be a Redskins fan, really.
No. No,
Ravens
I tend to go
fan.
With teams that are actually good.
So I get it. The Patriots earn a lot. People want to hate them, and they have a variety of reasons for hating them. Of course, I think the Patriots and Tom Brady are pretty darn awesome. But, of course, Radcliffe, he doesn't pick any of that. What does he pick on? Tom Brady had a MAGA hat in his locker.
MAGA hat. Again, this is becoming like the ultimate symbol of... It's like, if I had a liberal friend coming over and I didn't really want to see them or something, I would just put like a row of MAGA hats in front of my front door. It's like kryptonite. I can't get past the MAGA hat.
And just slightly smile. Put it on. Look out through the window.
It really is. It's like they have an allergy to it or something, which again, I mean, I seem to recall a whole heck of a lot of Obama bumper stickers and T-shirts and stuff.
Remember Trayvon Martin when Representative Bobby Rush took the floor in the hoodie?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yes, the hoodie. He felt that people were threatened by the hoodie, which... I don't know of anyone that's threatened by a hoodie. I own many hoodies.
I don't know.
In the wintertime, I'll wear a hoodie on a weekend. I'll confess.
Like, what is it about this hat? It's one thing, because I remember I used to look, people, and to this day, people will still, you'll still pass somebody that's got the Obama sticker on or the Obama T-shirt on or whatever. And I don't think, oh my gosh, that's threatening to me or that's triggering to me. I think, kind of what a dumb person. But then I go about my day like a sane human being who's not scared of a piece of fabric. But this hat, for whatever reason, you saw it with the kids, the Covington kids in front of the Lincoln Memorial. You see it where, people have literally been assaulted in restaurants and out in public for wearing this hat.
I want to see.
And now Radcliffe, he's saying that he won't Well, he won't.
He's not rooting. He's not going to root for the Patriots,
which I'm sure just
for his political
them.
Reasons. I mean, again, you know, if you don't want to root for him, I disagree with you. I think you probably should.
Well, I'm not going to root for them, but it's not because of
but
that.
I get where you're coming from. But if you really, if it comes down to the MAGA hat that Tom Brady had in his locker,
then you clearly,
and that's your reason.
Then you clearly are a really shallow person and don't have a lot going on in your life. If that's your biggest worry. And again, I feel bad for
you. And I don't understand. They celebrate being able to kill a baby in the third trimester by turning a building pink and screaming and sawing. But man, a MAGA hat.
But a red hat is
that's worth getting upset about. You know, I wonder if we can get some representatives to maybe wear that on the House of Representatives on the floor. I mean, if Frederica Wilson can wear her giant spangly cowboy hats, Bobby Rush could wear a hoodie.
Oh, and who's that? Who's the one from Connecticut?
Rosa DeLauro?
Oh, my goodness.
She doesn't usually wear a hat. Her hair kind of has looks like a hat.
It's a hat-like substance. I'm not... I remember the first time I ever saw her in person, and I literally followed her down several hallways just trying to figure out what the heck was going on with her. I didn't even know who she was, but she looked like the Riddler out of Batman is what she looked
like. Anyway. Yeah, no, she usually has like the matching hair.
It was really bad.
Pantsuit, the purple outfit.
It was pretty bad.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the MRC TV podcast. We'll see you again next week. Until then, I'm Eric Shiner.
I'm Brittany Hughes. We'll see you guys next time.